is an Enterprise Time Security podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with James Griffin, who's the CEO of Cybercentric, a company recently formed through a merger. We're going to talk today about the challenge of MSPs, especially in the cybersecurity space. James, good morning.
Good morning.
Do you want to tell us a little about yourself, Cybercentric, and maybe anything interesting you might have done in the past?
Maybe anything interesting. Hopefully I can give you a few interesting things. Running a cybersecurity business is a full-time job and doesn't leave much room for interesting outside of work things, but let me try. I'm James Griffin. I'm the CEO of Cybercentric, and as you rightly said, recently formed through the merger of Redstore and Titan HQ. I was the CEO of Redstore, having been there for just over 5 years, originally joining as the chief product officer and being responsible for building the company's software as part of that journey. What's interesting about me, I come from a place called Gloucester, love rugby, I love watching rugby, sadly not playing it anymore, but I'm not watching or attempting to talk about rugby. I really enjoy traveling around the world. Professionally, I've worked probably in all sorts of companies from startups through to massive global corporations across enterprises, consumer. I think I've pretty much done every role across the management suite, even a very brief and unqualified stint at running finance.
Everybody thinks finance is easy till they sit down and start trying to crunch numbers.
Absolutely. My new role is to run this fantastic company that we've just formed called Cybercentric, which we announced just over 3 weeks ago.
The company, as you said, is a merger of two companies enabled by an investor. Did the investor buy you both separately and then bring you together, or did they buy one and then buy the other immediately as an acquisition?
The investor is a company called Bregal Milestone, which are part of the Bregal Investments Group, and they were the backers of Redstore since December 2021. We've had a long journey with them. Recently, the transaction was that they acquired Titan HQ to merge with Redstore. So about a three-year gap between the two events.
Quite rare for that to happen in that sort of format. Was it your request that you needed something else, or was it they gone out, seen Titan and said, well, hang on, we think there's some synergy that we can make happen here?
We work really closely with them. Redstore, we set ourselves on a strategy which we unveiled last year, driven by what we see in the market, which is the convergence of data protection and backup. We set out a strategy that we therefore wanted to grow our portfolio. The feedback from the market, based on experience, was it would be a really bad idea for you to decide overnight you're a cybersecurity company and attempt to build that, so please don't do that. But at that point, we started looking for partnerships, where we could find a similar looking company that we could form a very tight partnership with. I've been speaking to Ronan, the CEO of Titan, for over a year. And when the opportunity arose, we asked the investors for support on getting the deal done. Of course, they scan the market constantly as well, and Titan were already on the radar as something that might be a good fit. It was something that we were all able to see the potential in and therefore get the deal done. As you rightly said, they're quite rare. What was rare is that you had me as the CEO of Redstore, Ronan as CEO of Titan. We could see the partnership and we had an investor that could see their way forward to bringing two portfolio companies together. So it clicked.
One of the challenges when you do that sort of M&A is there's a risk you've got overlapping MSPs, possibly overlapping customers, and you've got to rationalize that. You've got to rationalize sales channels. But I want to talk here particularly about the MSPs because that's where you and I were chatting the other day. If we look around the market at the moment, there's a real push by vendors, large and small in cybersecurity, to grow that MSP market. And there are good reasons for that. It's really expensive to have a direct one-to-one with every customer. And particularly at the smaller end, MSPs have a much better idea of what those customers need and can give a much more personal service. But you brought out the fact that often that MSP relationship is forgotten about in M&A. Given your focus on MSPs, given Titan's focus on MSPs, how did you approach that, keeping MSPs centre of the M&A rather than just the two companies as the centre of the M&A?
That's a brilliant question. It's at the core of the thesis for why we wanted to do it, and that's really important factor to our planning. Firstly, both organisations have got over 20 years of serving MSPs. for the reasons that you discussed. We believe very strongly that the MSPs are the trusted advisor of the small and medium-sized businesses that make up the bulk of the economy. And we've got lots of expertise. I look at that expertise as an asset, and that is really core then to the valuation of the company. What you're buying is not necessarily products. You're buying the expertise and the fact that products were built for MSPs. Not preserving that is inconceivable because it would be value eroding. But also in terms of how we want to grow this business, I'm sure we can get into some of how the other vendors approached it. I think MSPs are a little nervous that there's a pattern in M&A of, okay, two companies come together, private equity, and the next thing that happens is products degrade and the prices go up. Our strategy is to win MSPs from other vendors who are not doing a good job. And to do that, we need to be brilliant.
I'm going to stop you there. You said products degrade. That, to me, sounds like exactly the opposite of why you would do an M&A. You're acquiring a company, you know you've got a weakness in your product, and you want to boost it. You want to bring their tools into yours. Very few M&A is purely and simply about acquiring a wider customer base.
Exactly. But the really sad thing about how it has played out in the MSP channel too often is that is the core thesis and that is what they're promised. But then immediately after the M&A, people start hacking and slashing at the people that built the product in the first place, and it does degrade. And guess what? The MSPs find themselves in a position where the best of breed they chose in the first place is now no longer best of breed and now costs them more money. We see this, we hear it, and we felt that was a core thesis that, okay, how do we compete? The answer is really simple. Improve product as you go, continue to invest in product, integrate them properly, and the MSPs will come to us for those people that they are disenfranchised. That's why we've done this. We see a clear position in the market.
If I think about MSPs, and I've got some experience of that market going back quite a way, worked in a dealership back in the 1980s for a short period of time, very few of them are tied to one vendor. Now, back in the 80s, yes, they tended to be spin-offs of sales teams who'd left a large vendor, gone off on their own, and then maybe they added one or two things from other people just to bulk out their sales. But the reality today is most MSPs have a number of vendors on their books. If they see a merger between two vendors that they're dealing with and the price is going up and the quality is going down, why don't they just jump ship?
Quite often, the reason they don't jump ship, and it's almost passive dissent, is they're typically locked in through two or three methods, if you include the backup world. They tend to be locked in through contracting. They tend to be locked in through, quite often they've deeply embedded the products into their stack. And ultimately, much as they're disenfranchised, it means sometimes an end customer migration. And in the case of backup vendors typically make it really, really difficult to get your retention data. And that's artificial lock-in because you switch your backup vendor tomorrow, you need probably 90 days retention. So you have to go and get at least either 90 days or you're dual running for 90 days. It's very difficult for those MSPs to get out even when they're put under pressure. Now, don't get me wrong, there is a breaking point where they do, and we see a lot of that. It's typically not one big thing. It's three or four consecutive blows post the deal that upset the MSPs and push them into choosing a second vendor. And how they typically do it is to add that vendor in and put the new customers on the new stack. And then as they transition out the vendor that's upset them, that they will migrate on at a later date. We see that an awful lot now.
How do you do better for an MSP? There's a whole bunch of other things we can come to, but I'd like to look at this first. An MSP at the end of the day is just another customer. And unless they are shifting as a single MSP, a significant portion of your sales each year, they are that, just one other customer in a swathe of customers. As a result, people have channel briefings. They have channel conferences. My experience is they don't listen very well to that channel. They put demands on the channel, the number of people you have that must be trained in this. They put tiers into the channel that break down the amount of discount you'll get by the amount of product you sell. Those tiers then artificially control the type of customer you can sell to. And that requires massive investment from the MSP back into the vendors. Given what you've said already and your experience within this, how are you going to change that?
Firstly, we have to. Both companies have clearly had programs that do exactly as you've just described. Red Store's had a metal-based tier program for some time, and at different tiers you get different obligations and different rewards. What we now have a chance to do in CyberCentric, and you'll note we haven't launched a new partner program yet, and we haven't announced the harmonization of the two programs, and that's because we're out talking to MSPs at the moment to really ask that question. What I'm hearing quite loud and clearly is a lot more simple than I was expecting. What I'm getting is, look, James, there's no point in being a channel business if you don't make it easy for your channel to just be out there selling for you and representing you. We want you to ring-fence customers that we've bought to you so that they don't go to other MSPs. All the investment that the MSP put into growing them, they're the ones who reap the benefits. Something as basic as deal registration on renewals. We would prefer keen pricing over rebates is what I'm hearing. Just give us the best possible price that rewards loyalty and we can sell more of it. That training is really interesting. I have received a lot more push from MSPs around you guys need to do better of your training and accreditation programs, and that should be top, absolutely top of your list of a program. It's almost flip it on its head. Our training accreditation at the core and financial periphery, MDF, that kind of stuff, almost as a byproduct, and I'm continuing to be out in the field and encouraging MSPs to tell us what we're not good at so that we can, when we launch and announce our new program, which we will do, that it is different. Honestly, every single channel program I've seen recently probably started out in the mind of somebody like me is it's going to be revolutionary. And by the time it goes through the filters, it hits the page and it's bronze, silver, gold. And there's no point doing that.
One of the reasons I was laughing when you were talking about training was the reason I left the dealership I was working at in the 1980s was to set up a training company. I started doing it inside the company, but it really wasn't working for me as an employee. So went and did my own thing and contracted back to them and a bunch of other people. One of the things that was evident in the 80s was that people wanted to train their staff. These days, that training has shifted very much to training your channel, not training end customers. But the other thing that we've seen, particularly in the last 20 years, has been this issue of certification. Sometimes that's valuable. It's a certification that that person can take from one job to another to another. But with respect to CyberCentric, the two companies that have come together are not a Red Hat. They're not an IBM. They're not a Microsoft. They're not a company whose certification process would be something that if I was working for one of your MSPs, I would want because I knew it would help me get a job somewhere else if I didn't like my current MSP employer. How do you change that? How do you make that something valuable to the MSP? Make it valuable to the MSP's employees, make it valuable to their end customers, and make it something that's portable that says, this person has a skill that is transferable, that has value.
A few different questions in there, all great ones, by the way. One of which I definitely have not got the secret sauce to how you solve a globally recognized certification program other than making CyberCentric a really great business that's globally known, which is the mission for us. That's a journey that may take many years. We've said that our first milestone to creating a significant company is $100 million, but that's a step. My ambition for CyberCentric in many, many years' time is that it is a globally recognized organization. The people that will take us there are the MSPs. I'm absolutely certain of that. If I look more closely at the origin companies, RedStore's got a very strong footprint in education. MSPs that serve around 50% of the UK schools, that's RedStore's core base. What we see in there is people moving between MSPs. And because RedStore is effectively the de facto platform for managing educational establishments, that weight on that training and ability to operate RedStore effectively does have quite significant value in terms of them being able to step into that role and immediately operate at scale. MSPs will be serving thousands of schools. Schools are a massive target right now, so they need to be able to operate. So we have seen in practice in RedStore that training be a really valuable asset in those people moving around between different MSPs and selfishly keeping RedStore in as the preferred vendor when they arrive there. So a bit of harmony there.
It's a double retention then, isn't it? You get the benefit of the school still using your products, but for your MSPs, there's a reason to invest in their employees because once they've got that skill, they're just as valuable to your competitor.
100%. And education is a really good lens for this because it's a very budget conscious market and they are investing in this. It comes back to a confluence of cybersecurity, insurance frameworks, funding, and what we do. Because what we do provide really great backup is core to the standards that they have to operate within the schools. It's core to the insurance environment for those schools, and it's absolutely core to the funding environment. They cannot get their requisite funding if they're not properly insured and compliant. It is seen as an essential investment item. Therefore, it's really important that it's operated correctly. It does bail out schools, so when somebody has a cyber event, that the person at the other end knows how to press the right buttons to get that school up and running. And it's very high value. Now, aspirationally, if I can repeat that across a commercial global market, it will be in really great shape. But it's had to have been designed like that. It's not just how do we educate the MSP. That's the operation of the software. There's the onward education of the customers receiving the benefit from it as well. So we've created a lot of content, which we could, of course, now be rebranding and porting over to the new brand around the education of the end customer, not just on why they should have this, but on the value it delivers to them. I see it as programmatic, multi-tiered. It can't just be, here's a YouTube video and you get a badge for LinkedIn. There's no value in that.
How does that then work for bringing Titan HQ into the business? Because you obviously understand RedStore and how RedStore's built that. How did they build theirs, and how do you then integrate again those education of your MSP and their staff programs, but also education of customer programs?
So with Titan, very similar business, actually. So I don't think you can operate in the MSP world and not have an approach to training, especially in the world that they've occupied, which is effectively email and web security, which is very, very fast moving. What they have is very similar to us. So in fact, probably one of the only areas of duplication is the platforms that we both have to deliver the training content. So we now have two and we need to create one. Both companies have got a partner portal with lots and lots of training material. They have dedicated trainers on the Titan side, which is something that the RedStore team does not have. And I think that's a real asset. They have people that will work with MSPs, and they have a lot of content for MSPs to give to their own customers. Again, it's similar tone. It's around the threats. What you have out of the gate is two very well-developed content libraries operating in different programs on different platforms. The job now is to bring them together, not necessarily content-wise. I see them as modules. There's a web security module. There's now a backup module. But you organize them in a way that's consumable, because ultimately, depending on the size of the MSP as well, I've just come back from a customer visit in the US, and I met three different MSPs. In the larger one, there were about six people operating effectively the products that CyberCentric sells. And in the smaller one, there was one. It's either going to be one person that learns or six. It has to be modular. We need to bring it all into one platform and serve it back to those MSPs under the new CyberCentric brand. So the key integration activity now is pull it together.
If there's one word that most MSPs will facepalm over, it's the word platform. No vendor sells a product these days without saying, we're a platform. How do you, and let's go back to that original comment you made about platforms get degraded with mergers. How do you now modularize and focus on one of the two platforms? Because one of them now has to become the primary point into which everything plugs, in such a way that the MSPs see that as added value, not they're going to have to spend a lot of time stitching it together themselves.
I also face palm as well, because one of the reasons that platforms degrade is because people don't put a proper definition on what they mean by a platform. It means something completely different to almost everybody. There's obviously industry definitions, but you're right, it's pervasive in vendor marketing. Everybody's got the latest and greatest platform, and they'll talk about platform economics, platform benefits. A lot of it's just nonsense. My view of a platform is this: it's more than just the products. When I talk about the platform, and we try and not use it as much, I'm talking about everything from a single bill, single support desk, a set of APIs, a user interface, a product catalog, and the back-end platforms. I see that as the platform. That means, Mr. MSP, when you work with CyberCentric, the platform you experience is how you work with the company. The product catalog are the things that you use and consume. And the product catalog just happens to be a component of the platform. When a lot of vendors talk about their platform, they mean their product catalog, and they mean their back end. that's great. That's a start. But what MSPs are telling me is that's not enough, James. Some MSPs are saying, we don't want an integrated backend of backup and cybersecurity. We would like some firebreaks, please. What we definitely do want, however, is one API or one connected to our PSA tool. And we definitely want one bill, and we definitely want one service desk. Those are the bits that typically get degraded and forgot about. Well, you end up in these large platform companies where they end up operating seven platforms with one login screen. And the rest of it doesn't play through.
Hence my integration question, because I see all too often MSPs having to suddenly bring developers on board to understand APIs to do all that connectivity that the vendor doesn't ever deliver.
100%. I got asked a really great question at the recent PAX 8 event by an MSP, and he said, why have you guys not got connectors for Ninja and Halo as the PSA tools? And it's a brilliant question. And the answer is really straightforward. I knew we were going to do a merger, so if I launched you a Halo connector, it would only connect to half of the platform. Why would I do that? It's only going to give you half of the experience. What I would much rather do is build you a connector to Halo when it can orchestrate the whole thing and give you a much better experience. And it might mean I'm 6 months later and I'm going to give you something that actually works and doesn't frustrate you and doesn't need you to figure out how to do hard coding. Of course, I have the benefit of knowing that the deal's being done, but that's the approach we're taking. There's zero point in publishing a set of APIs that do 60% of the work and asking MSPs to figure out how to use them.
Building connectors, however, is time-consuming and it's expensive. If we were to take a comparison to an open source market, an open source vendor would build a community, it would invest in that community, and it would encourage that community to join a marketplace where if they develop something for the product, they can sell it. Very few vendors do this well, if they do it at all. When you've got the MSPs from the two companies, as were, now talking to you about, well, I had this on this platform, but you don't have it now over here, or I want this, why can't I have that? How are you encouraging them and working with them to build a marketplace whereby you can't build all of the connectors, but they can, and you can give them an opportunity to cross-sell across your other MSPs?
I'd love to tell you that that's something that we've actively engaged in 3 weeks after the merger, but it isn't, just being really straightforward. At the moment, what we're doing post-launch is getting out, talking to as many MSPs as I can personally, but also with the team. We've now got an R&D team that's twice as big. What do you need them to do for you and in what order? And then we'll get to how can the community contribute. Right now, what I ask of the community, if I'm allowed as the CEO, is please push us hard on what you need from us and hold us to account. And that's really the conversation. If we get to a scenario where we can make something like that work, I personally would love to. I couldn't really give you a coherent strategy on that right now, other than I've got 97 developers that I need to give a list of things that MSPs want that are really going to make a difference to them. I've probably got 100 things on that list from the origin companies, but the context has changed. If you want to give them the most impactful five, for example, perhaps when we talk in 6 months, a year, we might have some different feedback.
The one thing we haven't talked about here is how do you retain those MSPs? Because we've talked about the challenge for the MSP a little. We've talked about the problem of education of their staff, bringing them on, the challenge of tiers, things like that. But how do you persuade those MSPs they want to stay with the new company? That, yes, there might be a bit of pain in the beginning, because there always is when the merger goes ahead, but it will be better at the end of the day. Because honestly, if they've been around this market as long as I have, which is 40 plus years, they're going to have heard that so many times.
They hear it almost every quarter. The important thing is to let the MSPs tell us why. They've been crystal clear, certainly with me, and it has been, look, the strategy makes absolute sense. We understand that. No problem with that. It's really great, and we're rooting for you to deliver. However, do not go backwards on your service or your product. That is the red line, 100%. That's exceptionally fair. The way we're approaching the integration is the golden rule for the integration is no service degradation for existing customers. That comes above bringing new MSPs to the venture, is zero service degradation. And how we're doing that structurally is whilst we've consolidated the leadership of the engineering teams, the product teams are still operating very separately. Whilst we've consolidated the leadership of support, still the same two support teams providing great service to each. There is a lot of cross-training. We will only change that at the point that we're confident. So the mandate internally is hold the line for existing customers 100%. And in fact, get a bit closer to them. So get out in the field, speak to existing customers. That's critical. The best approach is to put existing customers front and center over bringing new ones to the organization. We want new ones, of course, and both companies onboard new ones. But we've got lots of loyal MSPs that have been with us a long time. Retention side, we've got an NPS of over 50, which we think is world-class and we're really proud of. We typically lose less than two MSPs a month, and one of those will be through going out of business, sadly. We're very proud of that. That was key in the investment thesis of why you do this, is both companies have got fantastic retention rates. Don't take that backwards. One MSP said it best to me last week, said, well, you know, staying still is not good enough. And I agree with that. So we can expect that as a baseline. But they will get some offers very shortly that won't be fully integrated offers, but they will be great commercial offers to give them a real head start on the market. We'll be tackling the list of what I call silent killers. And these are the things that are small enough that they don't want to bother us with. These are the little glitches that they might see in either product that are easier for them to just click a button and say that it's fine. And they never raise a ticket, so we never see them. We've now been out and about over the last 3 weeks, got a big list of these, and they're tiny. So we're going to start chalking those off, and they're going to see those silent killers tick away and service improvement.
But that standing still while you tick those off can also be seen as stagnation. They're going to want to see more than just, oh yeah, you've now got these things you're going to bring together. They're going to want to see 1 + 1 = 3. It's not just about bringing together the products from the two companies and trying to integrate them and deliver them a greater platform. They're going to want to see new features, not just fixes, new features, and features that they're hearing from their customers downstream. The challenge with any M&A is that the first 3 to 6 months realistically is a degree of stagnation in that sense, because you've got to work out who do you keep, who do you let go, what do you focus, what do you now end of life. How do you convince them you're not going to be stagnant? How do you convince them you're not going to be standing still for the next few months? Because we're hitting the school summer holiday period now, and school's new budgets kick in at the start of September when the new term starts. They're going to be going into those customers looking for that money now, in order to be able to drive forward. On the commercial side, depending upon where they are, will depend upon where those budgets start. They're going to want to go into customers and start to make their point now. They don't want to be saying, oh, these things are going to be coming, we don't know when.
Absolutely. So the key is communication here. We've got 97 engineers. We've got a roadmap that we've split the teams by integration, by silent killers and new feature development. And that new feature development comprises effectively the roadmap that Titan had previously, the roadmap that RedStore had previously. There's been very minimal reduction in that team. We're investing over £11 million a year into R&D, and we're going to continue to do that. In terms of firepower, that is largely the same. So they have the list. And what we need to do now is communicate it to the MSPs to say, here's what's coming. If you imagine three streams of work across the integration stream, the big questions are, when do we get an API? When do we get a connector? When do we get a login, a support desk, a single bill? So those would be the kind of things that we'll put out to the community there. The silent killers will be more of a regular cadence of, here's the stuff we fixed that was really annoying you. But then the new features list, I will be seeing the combined roadmap for the first time next week, assuming that I'm happy with it and there's no reason I wouldn't be, but I feel it's representative of what I've heard, then we will start communicating that with MSPs so that they can see not only fixing some of the issues that they've flagged, that we've got a sensible but not crazy plan for the integration, very steady, focused plan, but also continue to invest in those new features. They've got to then hold us accountable for delivering them. And I'm very keen on putting it out there in the public domain, because it means when I talk to people like yourself in 6 months' time and you see it and you say, well, you said you were going to do this, James. I don't want to be having a difficult conversation with the market saying, but we didn't. It becomes a device for customers holding us to account, which is really important. We're their vendor. They're not our customers. We're their vendor. Hopefully we'll be having a customer webinar towards the end of July where we'll surface that. Tony and his partner David will be pumping out the news releases in terms of the things that we're doing. you can't over communicate in a merger scenario.
That raises another question. When you are a channel driven business, everything is about co-marketing. It's not just about what you put out. It's not just about what your channel partners put out. Everybody's looking for that co-marketing spend. If there's one thing we've discovered in the last 15 to 18 months, those traditional channels that were great 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 years ago are very, very different. There's been such a significant shift. How do you change your engagement? How do you do better promotion with your partners so that they have more confidence in what is coming on? Because it's no longer just about press releases.
My time in marketing was the turn of the century to the 2010 period. It was very simple back then. Didn't feel it at the time, but it compared to today's world. What we've got is two models of MSP that I think about. We've got MSPs that are embedding backup and security within their standard service. So what they are educating the customers on is not necessarily the benefits of the product. They're educating the customers on the benefits of dealing with an MSP that is going to be there, be your consultant, your advisor. And then we have the MSPs that are reseller plus. So they will convince their customers, you need backup, you need web security. So firstly, two different challenges to solve. But what I've found in the market is on the first model, those organizations are growing through word of mouth. And they tend to operate, particularly in the county level in the US, really strong reputation. And how they get those referrals is they will do a lot of community events. They will do a lot of speaking slots. They will be quite proud of the vendors that they work with. For those, what we've been trialing pre-deal on the Red Store side is things like, okay, if you are doing a local community event, rather than us give you NDF, we will pay for that event. If you're doing a speaking slot, let's say a healthcare conference, we'll pay for that for you. I had a request this week. Could you give us details about Red Store's ESG program? Some videos so we can put that on our website. I think that's key. What grows those MSPs is high reputation, good ethical vendors that they're proud to work with and they're proud to work in their community. So that's providing a different asset stack and a different funding stack. With the reseller plus model, times are changing out there for that 100%. It has been a game of the vendor with the loudest hospitality spend and the lariest advertising has driven the demand in the door, and that's been great. But what we see a lot is what I call channel churn. We see a lot in that space of if you're a reseller plus and you're selling one of the loud, lary brands and that breaks, they're going to the other model. We've refrained from getting involved in that, actually, maybe financially, ultimately to the detriment. We provide all the assets, but fundamentally the model is shifting between one to the other. The fastest growing MSPs that we work with, the ones that are the loyalists and see the lowest amounts of channel churn, are the ones that are on the service-based model. So our job is to help the people who are on the reseller plus model build a services-based model and help educate them. And I got a great request this week. He said to me, James, you guys see all this from your data. You see who's winning, who's not, what model's winning. Why aren't you sharing it? And I've never considered it useful to me. If your fastest growing MSPs are the ones who are saying, we're not working with you unless you have backup. You're over here trying to convince us that we should be reselling backup. You should be telling us just embed it. That's what we want from you. That's just a shift that we need to now make more programmatically, is help people understand that if you try and sell something like backup, that's a difficult sell.
It's difficult because it's a boring sell. People think it's done and dusted. It's like trying to sell UPSs into a data center. They are critical pieces of equipment. People are bored because there's nothing shiny and exciting, or they don't have the word AI involved. But one of the things that has changed in marketing is now it's all about brand, not your brand, but your MSP's brand, and even individuals within those MSPs. And it doesn't matter the size of those companies. They could be one, two-man bands. What drives that is often little TikTok type videos, that sort of marketing engagement. You talked about creating the corporate video, the product video, the working with them on that type of marketing. You haven't talked about how you help them build their personal brands for the companies and key members of those companies. How do you make that shift? Because you're in a point where you're reviewing everything, and it seems to be the sort of thing that should be right on your table.
It's certainly on my table amongst a lot of other things right now. There's a big question there. Are we good enough at doing that ourselves? I don't want to be one of these vendors that pontificates into the channel. I saw a lot of that at the PAX 8 event, where you've got people frankly telling MSPs what they should think and do that aren't doing it themselves. I'm not sure I would be in a position to say to an MSP, genuinely, this is how you could build your personal brand, until I've listened to them a bit more, because I don't think we're doing a good enough job of it ourselves as a vendor.
I'm not suggesting you tell them. I'm suggesting you go and talk to them and ask them what they think they could do to market better. Many of these MSPs will be employing people who are not long out of school, because their revenue stream is low enough, they need those newer, younger workers in, rather than people who are going to be demanding 50, 60, 70,000 a year. So they're very close to the customer base. And we know what that customer base likes to consume. So have you asked them how they would like to shift the marketing, what you can do for them to help them build the brand? Not tell them, but ask them.
Yeah, a small lens, 3 weeks post-deal, meeting customers. But the only common thread so far, and you're right, by the way, on the backup, the people that are doing very well are not people who are trying to sell backup, because of all the reasons you talked about, it's seen as an insurance policy. The people who are selling recovery as part of their service, that's a different story. Because on the day that you need your backup to work, it's the most important piece of software in your armory. Every other day, as long as it's taking your data and putting it somewhere, you're not really interacting with it. Whatever content methods, it's got to be relevant. Standing out is really important. And this is where the ESG thing comes back for me. I feel we're probably missing a trick as a vendor here. And certainly, in terms of putting content in through a younger generation, what we see in our business is generational shift. When we've attracted younger talent to our organization, the things that are higher up their list in terms of things they care about when choosing an employer, or actually choosing potentially vendors, if it's decision making, would be things like sustainability, gender mix, all of those pieces. And we're a vendor that does a lot on this, not just tick box exercise. We have this running through our core. We've got class leading D&I stats. I really think there's a connection element here. I was looking at one of our partners yesterday. They had a big women in tech event as well. That's the kind of content I think that they should be building to stand out. I really do. The closer we can get to them to be a vendor that they're proud to work with, whether they build that content for TikTok or to be crawled by LLMs, it stands out because it elevates from the noise of everybody products. Great. I guarantee you today I could go on to 10 websites of MSPs and 10 vendor websites. I could mix the logos up and it would say the same thing. For me, it's learning how to, the collective, and I see it as an ecosystem, how can we stand out from the noise? You're not going to be out there spending $80 million on Formula One sponsorship. It's that straightforward. And how do you stand out is the question.
We're coming to the end of our time. I've got two more things I want to quickly cover off. I've sat both sides of this fence, on the vendor side and on the MSP side. Actually, I've sat all three sides. I've sat on the customer side as well. If there's one thing that used to bug me dealing with MSPs and partners, it was they all wanted a better level of customer support. But there's an awful lot of lazy people out there who don't invest in their own customer support. And everything the question the customer asks, if they can't answer it quickly in an FAQ, they ship it back as a level 2 support request. How do you stop that? How do you make their responsibility just as important to them as your quality of support and service desk is to them?
I've got a fairly strong view on this. From what we've seen at Red Store, it's been self-selecting. And some of that has been to do with where we're priced in the market. We are priced at a good value level because we're a premium product. Whether that's a self-selecting lens, it feels like it is, because that means we are getting quality MSPs that value good software. And therefore, I strongly believe that they value delivering a good service to their own customers. Now, I think if I was offering cheap and cheerful backup in a loss-making company, I would probably see something slightly differently. But what I keep impressing on our business here, so we've got 3,000 MSPs, a small sample of the global market, but material. And there's a reason, as you all know, you've worked in one, I've worked in a managed services business as well. If you start an MSP, it's for a reason. You could go and work in a corporate or do whatever. It's for a reason. You're typically very proud of your customer relationships. Two different degrees, but generalizing here. But it's a good point for me to remind the organization. Typically, it starts out and becomes a relatively big business. Some of them are 10 million ARR. They've got long customer tenure. They're very proud of their customers. And if the vendor gets between them and the customer relationship, that is not what we're here for. Our job is to make that customer to MSP relationship as smooth and as slick as possible. And the goal is to build products that don't need supporting. They work. And therefore, when the MSP needs to speak to us, it's typically because it's a more technical problem. And that's the model we've been operating really successfully in RedStore, and that's the future I see for CyberCentric. I'm sure if I was sat in a different vendor colours, I might see it slightly differently. But I think the MSPs we work with are high-trust organisations that are typically very technical, they understand quality, and they're very proud of their customer relationships.
But let me put you on the spot then. Let's imagine that this podcast is going to be listened to by every one of your 3,000 MSPs. What are the three things you're going to tell them as to why this merger was a good idea, why it's good for them, and how you can guarantee you're going to deliver what they want?
Let's take them one by one. Lots of reasons why the merger was a great idea, but why we thought it was a really great idea for MSPs is we genuinely have heard that they are underserved. They get to choose between the promise of a platform player, but the under-delivery, or working with individual companies like a RedStore or a Titan, but having the overhead of stitching them together and the commercial dilution. So we saw an opportunity to change that model and bring two companies that are best of breed together to offer that breadth, but at the same quality that they would get from that. That's why we believe from the get-go, merging two organizations was the right thing to do. Therefore, why it's good for them when we deliver this, and they will absolutely be the judge of this, is what they should see is better experience than they would get from those individual best of breed players or the platform player. But better experience means high quality support, brilliant product quality that continues to improve, the firepower that we have to do things at scale with them that we couldn't as individual vendors. So better programs, more product development, more programmatic approach to channel programs and how we help them grow. All of that becomes real. And that they get to experience a choice of 11 different products that they can buy in different packages from us and get a real commercial benefit from doing so and an operational benefit from them fitting in with how they work and not us having to ask them to bend around. That's the vision. I'll only be happy when that's the exact experience that MSPs feel, because they'll tell me if they think it's pie in the sky vendor fairy dust. So how are we going to deliver that? I am very happy that this is a deal that myself and Ronan wanted to do as the CEOs of the business, because we could see that. We had no intention of walking into anything where we felt all the hard work of the teams would be disintegrated, if you like. We've got the new exec team is made up 50-50 from Titan execs, RedStore execs. So we've got a huge amount of continuity. We've got two amazing teams operating really close to where all our partners are, in Galway, in Birmingham, in Reading, in South Africa, in Cape Town, in Joburg. We've got Tampa, we've got Connecticut. So we've got people now where our partners are. This is what I told the team internally. We saw the positioning and we heard from the market that they're crying out for a new champion. So did we do this? Yes. What do they want to believe this is real? Stability. They want to see benefits. They want us to tick off some must-dos very, very quickly, including single support desk, which is coming in August, single invoice coming soon, platform field. They want us to do that so badly, we have to deliver it for them. The rest will take care of itself. But we have to remember why we're here and why lots of other smart people have failed to do this. It's because they've really not done one thing, got out of their offices and gone and talked to MSPs. Go do that, put the customer voice at the center of everything we do. Don't promise a moon on the stick. Promise some sensible deliverables. Get it done so that people can feel it's real. And the MSPs will talk about us. That's it. That's the plan. If I deliver half of that by December, I will be over the moon. But I'm ambitious for this company. I'm ambitious for the MSPs. What we have here are all the ingredients to create the vendor that redefines the standards in the industry and that the MSPs evangelize. That's the goal.
That's quite a workload you've set yourself, James. I hope it works out. Thank you for talking with me.
Thank you very much. Always good to talk.